Very many people historically have used that gospel to have a discussion and raise the issue of the separation of church and state. Because whenever we use the word Caesar is mentioned here, it really refers to the governance, to the political side of things. And then Jesus says very bluntly, well, then give back to Caesar what is Caesar's and give to God what is God's. But to use that argument of separating church and state that way, with God as the instrument, that is really quite wrong. It's quite erroneous, because we do not portion God out into this part of the world and that part of the world. We don't portion God out at all, because the very being of God is presence. And that presence is everywhere all the time. Not just through an election or a referendum or any other issue that might be happening locally, nationally or internationally. God's presence is always there, even in government. Now, the issue that Matthew has brought forward here today is it has a couple of historical things in there that you ought to be aware of, I think, to help us understand. The first thing is that the Jews, at the time that Jesus was in his ministry at this time, they had what we would call kind of like religious leaders. They were the Pharisees, like the religious police, really. They were pretty tough. So, and they made life quite difficult for the average Jew in the pew. Bit of rhyming there. Now, above them was the king, the local king, and in this case it was King Herod. So when scripture says the Herodians, it is the followers, the close followers of King Herod. Now, Herod was a puppet king put in place by the Romans. And then you've got the third lot of people exercising power and governance over the average Jew in the pew, and that's the Romans. So the poor people, just trying to have an existence, had the Romans, the king, the puppet King Herod, and then the Pharisees all putting pressure on them. So that's why the Herodians get a mention there with the Pharisees, because they are the ones that are trying to trap Jesus. And so what do they use? They use the separation of church and state again. But the problem is that for the people of Judea at that time, which was a province, it was being taxed. All the provinces were being taxed to support Rome. Now, the history of taxation in Rome is very colourful. Now, when Rome was a republic, they even taxed widows. Are there any here this morning? I should say, how many are here this morning? They even taxed widows before Empress Julius Caesar became Augustus, or the following became Augustus. They taxed single women and single men. They taxed them because they had not married and therefore they were not breeding, therefore they were not contributing to the life of the Roman Empire. And it was felt that the military, they were the ones who were allowing these people to live in peace. And so those who were living in peace but not contributing by breeding, as it were, they were the ones that were taxed. Now, everybody had a tax at some stage. In Jesus' time, the four main taxes were on cattle, on property, on goods sold, and then there was what's called a poll tax or a head tax, and that's what they're referring to today. The head tax or the poll tax, every person over 12 years of age and under 65 was taxed a denarius. A denarius was the equivalent to one day's wage in Jesus' time. If you looked at the coin, the denarius coin, Jesus says, whose head is that? On the face of the coin was Caesar, the emperor. Now, the Jews looked at imagery as paganism. That's why they could not take the Roman coin into the temple. They would have to take the Roman coin and they would take it to the money changers and change it for temple money. And then they could take that money into the temple because it didn't have a face on it. But one step further, not only was the face representing paganism, the words on the denarius said this in the time of Jesus, said Tiberius Augustus, the divine, the high priest. So not only was it pagan, it had, cranked it up a notch to say that this human being was divine. And that made the Jews very, very uncomfortable. So the coin represented everything that good Jewish people would not be in favour of in any way, shape or form. But what does Jesus do? These guys come up and they say, is it right that we should pay our taxes to Caesar or not? Trying to trap him. And so what he does, he's clever, this guy, because he's God. He says, show me a coin. So they pull out a coin from their pocket or their purse, which says straight away, you don't like the Romans and you don't like paying your taxes, but you're prepared to use their money, aren't you? Now, a good Orthodox Jew, for example, so let's say the Pharisees and the Herodians, because that's the flag they flew, they wouldn't even carry the coin normally. But he says to them, well, show me a coin. And they can pull one out straight away. And that's why he calls them hypocrites. Because they're happy to make a song and dance about it, but they're also still happy to use it because they get the benefits. Jesus despised hypocrites. Absolutely despised them. And the Pharisees, more often than not, represented the hypocrites. Hypocrites, it comes from a Greek word which means an actor. So in Scripture, 34 times the word hypocrites gets mentioned, 18 times in Matthew's Gospel alone, coming through the lips of Jesus. These people represented the dishonesty, if you like. They were prepared to walk the walk, but they weren't prepared to walk the walk and talk the talk. And this is where it comes to align with our own lives. We have to be very careful that in our own life, as good Catholic Christians, at least trying to be good Catholic Christians, that we are honest, that what we say and what we do represents everything that Jesus gave us. And everything that he represented from God the Father to being a leader and a teacher in his community. There is no room for us to have any slip-ups. If we were accused of being hypocrites, that is probably the worst accusation that we can get. I think it goes above being dishonest. It's more than being dishonest. And if we remember that Jesus despised hypocrites, then we must make sure the tool for us is to make sure that in everything that we say and do, that Jesus is at the centre, that God is at the centre. And if we keep our focus on God in our life, in all of our actions, then there is no division between the politics and the church, between the secular and the sacred, for a good Christian. Because God is love, John's Gospel tells us. And if we put God at the centre, even through all of our struggles, we will be okay. But we are being honest even in our pain. We're being authentic in our pain. We can disagree with what governments say and do. And goodness knows if any of you are involved or followed the conversation from the ACT government about Calvary Hospital, you'll know about disagreement. If you look at the news, the awful news that's happening in Gaza at the moment, you will know about disagreement. And the Christians who are affected by this don't get any press at all. But certainly Hamas does, the Israelis do, and the Palestinians do. But in the middle of that very small acreage of Gaza, half the size of Canberra, where 2.3 million people are trying to live, in the centre of that there are Christians as well. So one of the oldest Christian churches, built in the 5th century, was just destroyed the day before yesterday. So for the Christians to be able to separate the politic from the pain, from the sacred and the secular, it would be very challenging there. And I just remind you of that at this time, because all of us who pay our taxes, our government does things with our money that I don't approve of. But I'm striving to be a good citizen of Australia. I am striving to do that. Just because I disagree doesn't mean that I have to shut things down. As long as I express my disagreement with true Catholic social justice, in a respectful way, and that I be allowed to express it respectfully, that is important. And I encourage you too, in whatever's going on in your life, to at least stand up as an authentic person who believes that God is love, and in the centre of this pain or in this sorrow, whatever might be happening in your life, that God is present. We are not alone in the joys and in the sorrows. And we must celebrate that. That's why each week, and sometimes more than weekly, we come back to say, Lord, feed us with your body and blood. You died for us. Give us life. And that is a struggle, particularly in 2026. I commend you all for the way that you strive down here at Naruma and on the South Coast to be a living presence. It's a battle. Especially when you have a beautiful day like today, and the golf course is calling, fish are biting, it's all happening, but you are here. And today all I see from you is that you are giving back to God what belongs to God.